You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. You have reached Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. And you are listening to our radio show, Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth, on every Thursday at noon. And today we are going to have one of my, I guess you could say favorite topics on and favorite guests as well. And this is talking about autism and a diet called the Feingold Diet. And we have had Jane on several times in the past, if you've been listening, but this is the first time we have ever spoken about the Feingold Diet, specifically in association with the with autistic spectrum disorders. And so for those of you just tuning in, Jane Hersey is a former teacher and Head Start consultant and has been the director of the Feingold Association since 1985. She's the author of Why Can't My Child Behave? And Healthier Food for Busy People. Both of which have been recommended by the Washington Post. Dr. Hersey. Mrs. Hersey has testified before the National Institutes of Health, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Congress about ADHD and diet, and has lectured at educational associations, hospitals, medical groups, universities, and schools across the country. And she has done countless interviews and on this subject about diet and food additives and how they affect the behavior of children. And so today we are going to talk about all of that in relationship to autistic spectrum disorders. So let me see if I can get Jane on the line. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I sure am, Julie. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for giving me a promotion there.
Of course.
<The doctor>.
It's always great to have you on.
Thank you so much.
So we've talked in the past about Feingold and some of those things, but I really want to just start at the beginning for those people who are just tuning in and,
sure.
Then give us a little context for our conversation about autism today. So maybe just firstly talk about what the Feingold Association is and what you do.
Right. I'd be glad to. First of all, we're a network of parents and professionals around the country, and we show people how they can use a simple dietary program that has been found to help a whole lot of different problems, learning disorders, behavior problems, health problems, including the problems with asthma and ear infections, etc. Most of the families who contact us have children who have symptoms of ADD or ADHD, but we also hear quite a bit from parents of autistic children, and we know that autism is a huge issue. And there could be many things going on, but a simple program like ours, we feel, is an excellent first step, first place to start. But you know, Julie, I know that you're very aware of the importance of helping people who don't have any particular problems but just want to have a better diet.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that as well. We show people how they can go into their neighborhood supermarket or wherever they normally would shop and how they can find healthier food, how they can find better food. And in many cases, the better food, which is not only better for you but better tasting, in many cases it actually is less expensive. So we do a whole lot of things, but I guess to put it in a nutshell, we show people how to find good food, how to find the things they like without the worst of the additives.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about those additives because,
yeah.
Of course, I'm so glad that you work with helping, I guess, the rest of the population just have a healthier diet, because I think a lot of people aren't aware of these artificial ingredients and additives and the fact that they not only are not health-promoting, but they actually can make people very sick depending on, you know, how they're able to process these out properly or if they're not able to process them properly. So you're speaking of things like artificial colors.
Yes, and the artificial colors, it's a really easy thing for anybody to avoid these things. Artificial colors will usually be on a label with color name followed by number. For example, if you see something that says red number 40, yellow number 5, blue number 2, anytime you see the combination of the color plus the number, that tells you it's a synthetic dye. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, first of all, it's made from petroleum, which is what gasoline is, of course, crude oil. And I think that if these packages told you that they contain something which was second cousin to gasoline, you wouldn't want to buy them. But not only does it sound sort of disgusting and unpalatable, but these additives have been shown to cause many, many different problems. First of all, they're carcinogens for the most part. They cause reproductive damage, cell damage, DNA damage, et cetera. They're just bad players. They're things that are totally unnecessary and that are really quite easy to avoid. We also take out artificial flavors. We eliminate the sweetener aspartame. And there are several preservatives that we get rid of. And the preservatives are also made from petroleum. And boy, petroleum is a versatile thing. It's used for all sorts of things. And by the way, if somebody is sensitive to these petrochemicals in their food, they'd be well advised to avoid most fragrances, because these days fragrances are no longer being made from rose petals. Most fragrances, even the really expensive ones all the way down to the perfume put in your laundry detergent, most of these are primarily made from petroleum. Mm. So whether you swallow them or breathe them in, they're just not good for anybody to be around.
And that really helps to explain for people that tend to get headaches or nauseous when they're around certain perfumes or fragrances or things, that it's the liver is overloaded and can't process those toxins quickly enough, even when you just inhale them.
Yeah.
That's, you know, those are some of the symptoms that sometimes people have, telling their system that they just cannot process these ingredients quickly enough. And interestingly, the same thing can happen when people ingest them, certainly end up with migraines and other things. But for some reason, it's often very difficult to, I don't know if it's difficult to make the association, or that people just can't imagine that, and so they don't look for it.
Yeah, you know, it was very difficult for us to make the association, because the main reason we got on the Feingold program back in the mid-1970s was because of my husband's migraine headaches. Mm. Now, if you go way back, and that's going way back, back in those days, the idea that food was linked to health, believe it or not, was a foreign concept to most people. People did not make the link between what you ate and your health. I mean, today it seems absurd that everybody didn't know it, but they didn't. Now, today people understand that food is connected with health, but very few people understand that food is also connected with behavior and the ability to focus and learn. So health, learning, and behavior. So far, we've accomplished an awareness of one of the three. People know that a healthy diet means a healthier body, but they don't understand that a lot of behaviors, not just in children, but in adults as well, are linked to chemicals in the food. And sometimes if they happen to be very sensitive to a particular food, that food alone can impact on their behavior and their focus.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing, and it's actually surprising that more people don't understand the connection with diet and their health. But it's coming along.
It is, and when people, very often a parent will understand the connection to some extent. For example, they'll say, "Oh, every time he eats sugar, he gets hyper." Mm. Well, usually the child is not actually eating sugar. You know, I'll say to a parent, well, do you give them the sugar bowl and a spoon?
Right.
Oh, no. They're talking about artificially colored, artificially flavored, very highly sweetened cereals and candies and drinks and you name it. And the funny thing is, I mean, I certainly would not defend sugar. I don't think sugar is good for you. But very few of these highly processed, junky foods even have sugar in them anymore. They have high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
It's not, you know, sugar and candy, sugar and sugary foods are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Children ate food that had sugar in them 50 years ago, and we didn't see ADHD all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what needs to be looked at is, why are things so different today compared to a generation or two ago? How come nobody knew what the word autism was 50 years ago? When I first heard the word autistic, I thought that the teacher was mispronouncing artistic. Today everybody knows what autism is.
Right.
Well, this doesn't just happen, And the idea that, oh, well, we're just better at recognizing it, well, that's pretty silly.
Right, right.
Because an autistic child, it's pretty easy to recognize.
Yes.
And if that were the case, where are all the 40, 50, and 60-year-old autistic people?
Right.
I mean, we'd have a Rain Man on every corner.
Right.
So the old ways of looking at things aren't working, and it's very, very hard to get a lot of people, particularly people in administrative positions, to say, you know what we've been doing doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Our approaches to autism haven't been that successful. And what we're saying in the Feingold Association is, look, let's step back a minute. Let's look around the country and find out who are the professionals who are working with these children and having success.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many different professionals, many different wonderful doctors doing many different things. And a lot of these things are highly successful. So let's, before we throw money at a problem when we don't know what we're doing, let's find out what's working.
Yes. I have to say, one of the things that we want to look at this from every angle possible, but one of the things I find frustrating is that when we spend all of these millions and millions of dollars to, quote, find a cure or find mm-hmm. a gene, when we're not even looking at some of just the basic things that influence it on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
That might give us some clues to some of the things that are going on. And, you know, we can work on helping to rebalance biochemistry without knowing which gene it is that's
mm-hmm.
causing the problem.
That's right. Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Julie, and this was the approach that Dr. Feingold took. He was the eminent doctor who actually was chief of allergy at Kaiser in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
in your neighborhood. And he used to tell us, he said he was a clinician, and that his job is to help the patient get well with as little downside as is absolutely necessary. And it was up to the researcher to figure out why his techniques or why a clinician's techniques worked.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, without spending another dime on all of these ventures that you just described so well, without spending another dime, all you need to do is look at what's working.
Mm.
Because if it's already working, this would be a good place to begin. And another approach that we believe in Feingold is, let's start with the simplest things first.
Exactly.
And in our current newsletter, our June newsletter, we have a kind of a hierarchy of our preference of treatment options, and we have a whole long list of different things parents can do, but we start with the easiest things first, and then you work down the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if buying the lollipops with the natural flavor and the natural color, you can do that as opposed to the artificial flavor and
mm-hmm.
color. That's a really simple thing. A parent can do it. It's not expensive. It's not difficult. Won't hurt anyone. We start with the easy things first, and then you just work down from there. And usually when people remove petrochemicals from their diet, it's very typical that they start to see improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of gives them the ambition and the energy to proceed from there. There's so much, I'm sure you're well aware of all the exciting work going on with the essential fatty acids and the
yes.
minerals and the vitamins. There's so much good stuff out there that's inexpensive and effective.
Absolutely. And so, speaking of what's working,
mm-hmm.
for those people that are new to all of this, my autism is my specialty, and I was just speaking at the Defeat Autism Defeat Autism Now conference back in April in D.C. And for people that are unfamiliar, they're called DAN for short, and they are part of the Autism Research Institute. And the Autism Research Institute has gone out and polled thousands and thousands of parents on what drugs, diet, and supplementation had the most benefit and the most negative effects for each one of those. And there are, boy, there, you know, there's maybe, I would say, dozens of medications,
yeah.
handfuls of supplements, and a whole handful or two of diets that
mm-hmm.
they've gone through. And wouldn't you know that in general, diet shows up on the list probably, I don't remember exactly, but probably of the top five things, there is at least two or three diets that are in the very top of all of the recommended approaches to this. So firstly, diet to begin with is huge. And then the Feingold diet has, and you might know the numbers better than I do, but a better than 50% success rate where they've seen improvement. And the other side to that is one of the lowest numbers of downsides. So you might get, 52% benefit with 2%. Negative side effects or something
like
that.
You know, Julie, I would love to find out from the people what were the negative side effects. The one thing that comes to mind is when you remove these additives, and sometimes I believe it's true with gluten and casein, when you remove the thing that the child is having problems with, there's sometimes a withdrawal where they get worse first.
Right.
We're aware that sometimes happens, and maybe that's where the downside came. But
with anything, if you look at the placebo effect on any drug they're testing or any of that, there is always some small percentage of people that either appear to respond negatively or appear to not respond well or something. And sometimes it's hard to know, is it that they were sick at the time? Was it that there was some ingredient in the diet that they weren't aware of that they were substituting that was also a problem? Or like you said, was it? So personally, I don't think I've really ever seen a downside by working on diet, especially removing these artificial ingredients. But the point being is that there might be other, it could be anything, whether it's supplements or medications that have maybe an upside of 20-30%, but then the downside is also 10 or 15%. And so you went all the diet options, including Feingold, you always see some of the very highest positive numbers and some of the very lowest negative numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's my recollection that when Dr. Rimland first took the poll that the gluten-free, casein-free diet was not well known. Interestingly enough, if you put a child on a gluten-free, casein-free diet, if you eliminate wheat and other sources of gluten as well as dairy and sources of casein, you end up buying a lot of specialized food that usually will not have artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives. So it's kind of you're sort of automatically getting rid of another whole group of unwanted, unwelcome chemicals.
Exactly, because people that are going to be doing something like a gluten and casein-free diet for their health, of course, are going to know that they're not going to want any of those other additives in
there. And I'm not aware of companies that make these gluten and casein-free things usually are fairly pure.
Yes.
So the chance that they would put red number 40 in there in their gluten-free cupcakes is pretty slim.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So where should we start in terms of maybe we should give people, let me think here.
Where to begin? I have a few suggestions, if I may.
Please.
Okay, great. I, not being a scientist by background, I like to make things simple and understandable to myself. And the way I do that is looking at this, what I would say is in order for our brains to function, and with autism, we're talking about things that are not working right in the child's brain. In order for our brains to function, a lot of things have to, quote, go right. I realize this isn't very grammatically correct, but a lot of things have to happen that happen correctly. In order for our brains to operate, they're incredibly complex, and a lot of things have to happen and in a certain order. So in order to maximize the possibility that our bodies will work, that our brains will work as they should, we have to do a couple things. We have to take in the raw materials that we need, and that is the food that will contain the vitamins, the minerals, etc. So you want to take in the good stuff. More good stuff that you can get in, the better. And in some cases, maybe supplement it with other things, vitamins, minerals, etc. So you take in more of the good stuff. You avoid the bad stuff. You stay away from petroleum-based additives. You avoid lead. You avoid mercury. You avoid toxins of all types. You avoid fragrances sprayed all over the house. So you take in the good stuff. You avoid the bad stuff. And then hopefully your body will have enough good stuff, again, to make the enzymes that it needs, because in order for our bodies to work right, we not only need to nourish them, but our bodies need to produce enzymes to handle both the toxins and the foods that we take in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought I was going to make it simple, but it's not. There's no way to make it simple. One of our volunteers talked about her quote. I would like to quote her here. I think it's wonderful. She says, autism is a physical illness that looks like a mental disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And she says it starts in the gut, it starts in the intestines, because the brain does not exist by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Rimlin used to talk about this, that these children, and Dr. Megson as well, these children don't have an emotional disorder. They're physically sick.
Right.
Things aren't working.
Yes. I like to say that they have a neurological rather than a psychological disorder.
Oh, that's perfect.
Because neurological means that it's some chemistry in the brain,
yeah.
Some neurological function in the brain that is imbalanced, and
mm-hmm.
It's the body's same biochemical processes that affect both the body's health as well as the brain's health. And so if we can just balance the biochemistry of the system from the gut to the immune system in the
mm-hmm.
brain, then
mm-hmm.
we can actually help them turn around some of these problems, as opposed to just trying to do our best to mask them or some other way of,
mm-hmm.
of approaching it.
Or the approach where they have intensive one-on-one help for these children can be quite successful from what I've read. However, it's not a practical way to deal with the millions of children coming along with this problem. It's incredibly expensive,
mm-hmm.
and there are other ways that are at least as effective, that are something that can be done to help all of the children. You know, you're talking about all the systems of the body working together. Reminds me, when I talk with parents and we talk about ADD and ADHD, I say to them, you know, the brain and the stomach are part of the same body.
Right.
What goes into your stomach is going to affect your brain.
Right.
And it's even more the case with autism. It's the stomach and the intestines and other things.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things with all the therapies are wonderful, and they all add to
mm-hmm.
The situation. And a lot of my clients have told me that their speech therapist for their child and their occupational
mm-hmm.
therapist see better improvements when they're on a better diet, because
yes.
it just turns on more brain connections so they can learn even better. So those therapies that they're spending so much money on can be
yeah.
even more effective. So
absolutely.
We certainly don't need to do one versus another. We can do all of them.
Right. Right. Well, you know, that reminds me, years ago, I remember a mom said to me, well, she was reluctant to try the Feingold diet because her child was getting a particular therapy. And I looked at her and I said, well, does he eat? Well, if he eats, why not? You know, it's not
right.
just you can only have one. Why not give him really good food while you're getting this therapy,
yes.
and maybe the two will work together?
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, people think you're only allowed to have one.
Right. So maybe we should talk a little bit about some of the, since we're speaking of chemistry and biochemistry,
mm-hmm.
we can talk a little bit about what is it about these artificial ingredients, these phenols and salicylates that are problematic for these kids. You had mentioned earlier that Dr. Feingold had found that these additives start acting on the brain and creating some of these behavioral and cognitive
mm-hmm.
challenges. But what is it about these phenols and salicylates that create this challenge?
Well, I would probably defer more to you for an answer, but my understanding of it is that the additives, in order for our body to process and get rid of them, they need to have lots of enzymes available, particularly one called phenylsulfotransferase. And a lot of autistic children are pretty short on this enzyme to begin with. And then when you add in the petroleum-based additives, the body needs more of the enzyme to get rid of that. And then you add in the natural salicylates. Now, these are different from the additives, because natural salicylates, when we talk about it, refers to wholesome foods that some people just don't handle very well. It's just like we know wheat is a wholesome food, but if you're gluten sensitive, you have to stay away from it. Well, the same is true with a large group of common fruits we call salicylates. And for the person who ingests salicylates, particularly for the autistic child, when they eat apples or oranges or raisins or grapes or things like that, that not only uses up more of the enzyme, the phenylsulfotransferase, But the salicylates, for some reason, inhibit his body from creating more of the enzyme. So it gives him a double whammy.
Mm.
And again, it's a strange concept, not only for us, but for people we talk to, that something as wholesome as an apple may be something that your body just doesn't handle very well.
Right. And then when people always say, well, why doesn't everyone have autism or mm-hmm. all of those? Well, not everybody has this biochemistry where they're mm-hmm. having this challenge with this particular biochemical process.
Absolutely. And what some of the researchers, I believe it was Dr. Megson in Virginia, pointed out is that you can look at the parents of autistic children and you can see certain problems that they have. For example, night blindness is very common. This is related to insufficient amounts of vitamin A and possibly other things. But she pointed out several things, family history of night blindness in at least one parent, diabetes, heart attack at less than age 50, colon cancer. So there are many things that set up one person to be more sensitive than the next. And this is just almost quoting directly from what Dr. Feingold used to tell us, that there are a lot of reasons why one person will be sensitive and another person won't. And one is the genetic inheritance. Another is anything that might have happened during the pregnancy, any trauma during delivery, including perhaps short-term loss of oxygen if the cord is clamped or is compressed. Plus, after the baby is born, things that happen to one child that are not identical to another. So the simple answer to why one person hasn't, one doesn't, is just look at them. They don't look identical. Well, why would the rest of their bodies not be, different? They are. We're all different. And there are many things that set one person up to be sensitive and not another. So if you turn the clock back 50 years, perhaps a baby might have inherited some of the genetic tendencies, but he wasn't exposed to purple ketchup and blue applesauce and all the fragrances and chemicals and all the stuff and all the vaccines that he was getting and all the other things. There weren't pollutants in the water and you name it. I mean,
right.
We could go on and on. So maybe the reason why we're seeing the problem today, which we weren't seeing 50 years ago, there are things going on in our diet and in our environment and in our water and air that weren't there before.
Yes, and to make it even more complicated and difficult is that this biochemical process that you're talking about, this enzyme called PST, so for people that are new to this, PST is not a digestive enzyme, but a metabolic enzyme. And so it's not happening in the gut, but it's happening at the cellular level. And this enzyme requires sulfate, or basically your body's sulfur, to do that. But the body also needs two biochemical processes. One is called methylation, and one is called sulfation. And so I'll do my best to make it simple here. It starts with methylation, and then from methylation, you go towards sulfation. So if methylation isn't working, then sulfation doesn't work. And wouldn't you know that now there's some new research showing that some of these toxins in our environment, like mercury and some of the others, may actually knock out the methylation pathway. So now it becomes more obvious that why didn't we have this long ago? Well, we didn't have all these chemicals that were creating this burden on the system, and we didn't have these chemicals creating the biochemical the break in the biochemical processes. Mm-hmm. And there's another step to it, in which is there's a process called transgenerational epigenetics. And to simplify that in a nutshell, it's basically what happens with genes from one generation to another. And some of that new research is showing that if my mother smoked, versus if my grandmother smoked. It would be better for my health if my direct mother was a smoker than if my grandmother was a smoker, because of the way that those genes get passed on through the egg, through DNA, and you make changes to the DNA or what genes are turned on and turned off through that. So again, you now have toxins that have now accumulated for a couple generations that might be turning these genes in a way that you have, you know, maybe mom had migraines, or the you know, uncle has some autoimmune condition, but now the child has autism, because we have generation after generation of the body being impacted by these chemicals, both genetically and through biochemical processes not working right. So it is a mess, I have to say.
Yeah, but you know, you presented it very understandably, because each generation kind of inherits the bad stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and also, you know, another thing to bring in is the a lot of people are getting an awful lot of sulfur in antibiotics and antipsychotic drugs. They're getting more sulfur, or the wrong type of sulfur. In fact, the Developmental Delay Registry found out that ear infections are very closely connected with frequent antibiotic use. And if you look at, if you were to start at the beginning, from my perspective, you look at the synthetic additives, well, we know from experience and from some research that the additives, such as the artificial colors and flavors, can trigger ear infections. Up until very recently, it was commonplace when a child had an ear infection to give him antibiotics, whether they were effective or not. The antibiotics messes up the digestive system, the harmful byproducts of yeast overgrowth in the gut are connected with the autism that you see later. So it's one thing, one mistake builds upon another, builds upon another. So what we say is, look, maybe if you could prevent the illness for which they give the antibiotics, maybe if you could just give the child healthier food, he wouldn't have the ear infections or the asthma or the other problems, thus he wouldn't get the medicine, thus he wouldn't have all the negative side effects from it.
Sure, and so then you see, you know, kind of, unfortunately, assault after assault happening to these poor children that are typically some of the ones that are the least biochemically equipped to handle probably all of this, which is might be why the reason that they were having more colds or ear infections to begin with. And so, yeah, we need to roll back the, not necessarily roll back the clock, but take a bigger picture view on this and figure out, okay, well, where can we start where we can impact their health in general, and we can impact their behavior because the way these chemicals act on it, and then go from there and see what other types of dietary intervention would be helpful.
Well, you know, Julie, what we like to do in Feingold, you were talking about rolling back the clock, we like to have it both ways. We want the old-fashioned nutrition from, you know, generations ago, plus the modern convenience of today. And one of the things that I have found is a real stumbling block for people is most of us have this impression that you can't have it both ways, that it's either or. For example, either your food will be healthy or you will like the taste of it.
Right.
Well, you know, it isn't the case. Either you will have terrible food at a low price, or you will have to pay a whole lot of money for good food, which isn't the case either. We know how to find food that is good for you, that tastes great, that's convenient, modern, and at a very reasonable price. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, the worst food is actually the most expensive food.
Absolutely. When you think of, especially when you think of nutrient per nutrient that's in or not in there, right?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we work against is this ingrained belief that you can't have it both ways, but you really can. Mm. And that's, I would say that's one of the main things that our nonprofit organization does, that the Feingold Association does. We show you how you can find the food you like. We don't make a real strong judgment about whether it's okay to eat cookies or candy or ice cream. What we say is, look, if this is what you would normally eat, whether it's healthy or not so healthy, here's how you can find it in a better version.
Mm-hmm.
If you want those cheese snacks, here's the version made by the same company, two versions made by the same company, and one is loaded with MSG and Yellow 5 and Yellow 6 and artificial flavor, and another one right on the shelf right next to it has natural ingredients and is actually a whole lot better taste.
Absolutely. And for those people just tuning in, you are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM, and you are listening to Reality Sandwich, and we're here with Jane Hersey. If you would like to get a copy of this or listen to this recording later, you can go to realitysandwichradio.com and hear a free download and pass it along to your friends. So let's talk a little bit about some of the nuts and bolts here for people. There's people that have children on the autistic spectrum, mm-hmm. and understand the benefit of a healthy diet in general. Mm-hmm. What else can you tell us? I know there was a study, a Liverpool study that was done.
Yeah. Yes, this study at the University of Liverpool was very important. What they did was they tested some of the food additives, but what was different about this was instead of testing a single food additive one at a time, which is usually the case, mm-hmm. which is totally unrealistic, they took two additives and tested them together. And they tested blue dye and monosodium glutamate, and then they tested yellow dye and aspartame. And what they found was, first of all, and the way they test is they apply the chemical directly to nerve cells, I believe in a petri dish, and this is a method of testing that is often used to test the harmful effects of pesticides and things like that. So, yes, it is not the same as ingesting, swallowing the additive, but it's a pretty good way of testing. And what they found was that whereas the blue dye, the MSG, the aspartame, and yellow dye caused damage to nerve cells when they were applied singly, if they combined two of them, the damage was much, much greater. So when they combined the blue dye and the MSG, the damage to the nerve cells was four times as great as when they were applied singly. And when they applied the aspartame and the yellow dye, the damage was seven times as great.
Wow.
Now, what does this mean in a practical way? Well, it means that the functioning of the nerve cells in the brain are going to be damaged when people consume these additives, mm-hmm. that the brain cells, the growth of the brain cells are impacted, and also the signaling from one nerve cell to the next, which is how we think, that these are going to be harmed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look, all you have to do is look at the cereal bowl of a typical bowl of cereal. I mean, the stuff practically glows out at you. Now, how many different dyes are mixed in there?
Oh, yeah, sure. Five, six sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, probably all. There are only seven still allowed in food because all the rest have been banned. But they're probably all in there. And then you throw in artificial flavor. Well, what is artificial flavor? A single artificial flavor can be made up of hundreds and even thousands of chemicals.
Oh, boy.
And nobody has to tell you what they are, let alone do any kind of research on them. Then throw in some BHA and BHT, petroleum-based additives. Throw in some high-fructose corn syrup. Who knows what that does? By the time the child has a spoonful of this stuff, he's ingesting, I don't know how many different chemicals he's ingesting. And nobody studies this. Nobody does research on what children and to some extent adults are actually eating. No child eats just yellow number 5 or blue number 1. So it's very unrealistic.
And that's only one meal.
That's absolutely. And then, you know, look at the fragrance that mom sprays all around the house,
yes.
and the perfume in their fabric softening strips, so the child sleeps on the sheets mm-hmm. that have all this stuff, and fragrance in everything in the bathroom, and the artificial fake orange juice, and that, you know, who knows, the purple dinosaur vitamins and the amoxicillin, which is neon pink. And that's before the child even gets to school, where they hand out candy when they do their math problems. And I don't even want to talk about the atrocities called school lunches.
Sure.
So, You know, what is amazing, Julie, is that any of these kids are functioning.
I was just going to say that. It really is. I mean, when I see all of the things. So, for example, for some of those people out there, why is all this so important? We talked about this PST enzyme. Mm-hmm. Well, it requires sulfate, like we had mentioned. And you have a sulfate pool. It's a limited pool you have. And so when you eat all of these chemicals and dyes, now you're using your entire sulfate pool to process all of these fragrances and chemicals and everything. And then what happens? Then you get in contact with, let's say, some chemical or fragrance or something outside, and now you need that sulfate to do a process called sulfation, which is a process that the liver does, and now you're overloaded, and you just can't do it, all these things that you need to do. The sulfate helps with digestion. It helps to form the gut barrier, so all of those little I want to call them slats. All the little, they're called GAGs, glucosaminoglycans. But what they basically are is the system that keeps our gut to allow the good nutrients through and the bad nutrients not through. And when you have the sulfate pool missing, you are missing the sulfate that would help have the gut be in good shape so you can digest your foods. You would have the barrier for your brain to make sure these chemicals don't get into the brain. You know, you need them for the detoxification. So now you have all of these chemicals that are being used up for these food additives, and you don't have it for all the rest of the life processes that you need that we come in contact with every day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to me, I've sometimes used the example of a bank account. You withdraw and withdraw and withdraw, and if you keep taking out, and you don't put back in, we all know what happens. Well, you can't keep taking out nutrients from your body by stressing it out this way without putting back in the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, I know it's so oversimplified, but take in more of the good stuff, expose yourself to less of the bad stuff, and your body will know what to do and how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the food is not the only issue, but it's such an important issue, and it kind of is amusing to me in a way that people are looking everywhere for answers except right under their nose,
right?
Because that's where
literally.
The food is. And you know, it's not just theory that we're talking about. We've worked with families for 31 years, and whereas the majority of people we've worked with are not families of autistic children, of course, 30 years ago there weren't that many of them around. But we do work with some families of autistic children, and we have heard some remarkable stories about just making simple changes in their diet being all that the child needed. And another thing, Julie, which we've noticed is a lot of children who don't have autism will start to exhibit autistic symptoms after they've been exposed to these chemicals. And I saw that with my daughter. When she was exposed to artificial colors, flavors, things like that, she would have difficulty making eye contact. Another child might walk on their toes, but only when they're exposed and reacting to these additives. Another child might flap their hands. These are all autistic-type symptoms in children who aren't autistic. You know, I think the way the medical system works in this country, people are supposed to be able to be put into a tiny little box, and, you know, you're only allowed to have these particular symptoms.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
And they ignore the other ones, and they don't see the connection that most kids with autism have a gut issue, too, not just a brain thing going on.
Yes.
So if you miss that, then you don't make the food connection. And so for people that... I always hear the comment of, well, there isn't any science on this, or, well, you know, there's no study. That's absolutely untrue. And if you're looking for any information, there's a couple places you can go. Firstly, the Feingold website has some great scientific study, and you can go to feingold.org, which is feingold.org. And you can also go to addiet.com, correct?
Yes, addiet.com takes you to the same place, but you don't have to worry about the spelling. We also have an 800 number, if I could give that out.
Sure.
Okay, they can call toll-free 1-800-321-3287. That's 1-800-321-3287. 3287, and we're happy to share complimentary information. But yes, you're right, Julie, the website has an awesome list of abstracts from studies on many, many different issues, not just the behavior and learning, not just the autism. And there needs to be more studies.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see more studies, but unfortunately, a lot of studies are funded by the drug industry, which
right.
has the money to do it.
Or the food industry.
Or the food industry, right. And the people who are interested in this area are not the people with the funds there.
Right.
So it's harder to do the studies. But we have so much clinical data. You know, I don't consult a journal before I wake up in the morning and decide whether, you know, whether to have orange juice or grapefruit.
Right.
For breakfast. You know, most of what we do because we know it makes sense.
Absolutely.
And studies are great, but they're not everything.
Right. And you know, I've worked with a lot of children on the autistic spectrum, and the adding the Feingold diet to any other diet we're doing is always a great place to go to, because there's you usually see some level of improvement, some
yeah.
benefit.
Yeah.
Even if just the whole family is going to be just generally healthier, that alone yeah. is a good thing.
Yeah, one of the fun things about the work that we do is a lot of people find when they make a very simple change, like just cutting out the dye, a lot of people find that there's a very immediate and positive response in, on the part of the squeaky wheel.
Right.
And so with a lot of healthy diets, people that are promoting healthy diets, which is great, but they're talking about, well, 10 or 20 years from now, you won't get cancer. Well, our program is one where you can see a turnaround, in not all cases, but in many cases, you can see a turnaround in a child in a matter of days. And that is a terrific incentive to realize, you know what? Food really matters. It's important.
Definitely. In our last couple minutes, I want to ask you a little bit about the diet and doing the diet, because I know there's various stages to the diet.
Yes.
And I know, of course, anybody right now could go out there and eliminate their artificial ingredients and find mm-hmm. a good thing to substitute them for. But there's actually a process for the Feingold diet itself, and it
yes.
starts with stage one. And can you give just a what I'm interested in mm-hmm. is well, describe stage one to
right.
us, and then stage two quickly, and then give us just a sense of how they might implement the diet. And, of
sure.
course, they can go to your website for all the details on how to get some resources for that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Let me start by saying I'm a very lazy cook, and I do not work very hard at this at all. Stage one is where we say, first of all, let's get rid of the petroleum. Who needs to eat it? Nobody wants that
mm-hmm.
stuff. That's easy to do, and it's a simple no-brainer. But we say, you know what, supposing your child or your family member turns out to be somebody who simply cannot handle apples or gets hives from strawberries or something, let's figure out if any of these healthy foods might be causing a problem too.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you would do any experiment, you would take out anything that's a possible problem. We get rid of the additives, not all additives, just the worst ones. We get rid of those. And then we temporarily take out apples and oranges, et cetera. So during the early period, when you're in stage one, if you would normally make something with oranges, you can use pineapple instead, because
mm-hmm.
there are fruits and loads of vegetables and quite a few fruits that are well tolerated. If you were going to make an apple pie, although I don't need to bake anymore, I can find lots of natural things, but let's say I was going to make an apple pie, I would use pears. Instead
mm-hmm.
of apples.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. You would use melons. You would use, you could use things like kiwi, mango, et cetera. Bananas are okay. So during this early period for a couple of weeks, you first of all get rid of the additives. Those are gone. And then in place of one fruit, you would substitute another. Then when you say, okay, we're doing really well. Now I'm ready to start reintroducing. You choose whichever fruit or substance you miss the most. It may be one of the few vegetables like peppers or cucumbers. And you add that back and you test it out just the way you introduce new food to a baby. And if you eat some strawberries and you don't have a problem, then try some more. And it may be that you just do fine with strawberries. And then you gradually add back whatever of the salicylate fruits you want. And then what really started out as a test becomes the diet that you use. And it's a diet that is geared to what your sensitivities are. Now, some people are quite sensitive when they start out on this, and then after a number of months or a year, they find, oh, they can go back and eat all those fruits and they don't have a problem with mm-hmm. them. This is very typical, that particularly in children, that they, if they stay away from these things for a little while, they can reintroduce them. So basically, my family's been on the Feingold program since 1975. We eat any kind of food we want, but I know how to find a version without the worst of the additives. And then when we are out eating out, we're pretty casual about it. We avoid the obvious things. Mm-hmm. We would never eat the cherry on top of the sundae or whatever. We make a few educated choices. But if we slip up, our diet is good enough that we really wouldn't notice it.
Mm-hmm. You probably have that sulfate pool built back up yeah. in the biochemical processes that aren't so overburdened that you can
Absolutely.
Handle a little.
But you know, I don't want to eat the stuff.
No. It's more of in the case of an accident or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could, but why would I?
Oh, it tastes terrible. Why would you go back to that?
Yeah.
One last quick question.
Sure.
How long do people need to stay on stage one? Because sometimes I have trouble convincing people that they need to stay on it for, say, 4 to 6 weeks. Can we do a shorter couple-week trial for phase one?
You know what I say to people, you can do it if you want, but if it doesn't work, please don't say, you know, this isn't going to work. We encourage people to stay on it at least 4 to 6 weeks, and I know that seems like a major pain. However, once we saw that by making these changes in our diet, my daughter's behavior became normal, and my husband wasn't sick constantly with headaches. When you weigh that compared to wanting to have that ketchup on your fries, you know, it becomes a no-brainer.
And when you say that part, is that the testing phase specifically? You want to be on the testing phase of 4 to 6 weeks? Certainly,
no,
I'd want someone to be on the diet for hopefully months, if not, you know, however as long as they need.
Yeah, we like people to stay on stage one for as long as they are comfortably able to. Now, what usually happens is, first of all, they get rid of the additives, and nobody wants to get those back again. It's so easy to find whatever you want without them. And then they'll be on stage one, and they'll be avoiding these foods. And then they go out and visit Aunt Millie, and she serves strawberry shortcake, and they have a piece. And then they observe and see whether they see a problem or not. But if people don't give it enough time, it kind of comes back and bites you.
Sure.
It's in the long run. I know it's hard to think of this as a long-term thing, but, you know, we started this out more than 30 years ago, and an extra couple weeks in that perspective
right.
is pretty small.
Right.
So I encourage people to follow it the way we lay it out in our literature. Why? Because it has worked so well. Now, that doesn't mean that we're rigid and we say, well, you have to do it our way. You don't have to do it our way, but if you want the best results, it's a good idea to do it our way.
And like you said, it's not a difficult thing to do.
It really is so easy. I mean, I just made some cookies from a chocolate cake mix I bought in the supermarket, and it's a Duncan Hines mix, deep dark chocolate fudge. It's the one that doesn't have the fake vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
It was so easy. I don't bake very much, but I occasionally do.
Let's give your information out one more time before we run here. It's
addddiet.com. Correct.
And it's the Feingold Association, Feingold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jane, thank you so much again for being with us.
Oh, I love talking with you, Julie. Thank you so much for
Take
having
care.
Me.
Take care. All right. Bye.
Bye, Deb.
You are listening to Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant on Reality Sandwich. Up next is Connecting the Dots, so I want to get to that. I just want to let people know if they're interested in this past radio show, they can go to realitysandwichradio.com. And if you're interested in any more information on phenols and sulfation and the Feingold diet, you can go to the website that Jane mentioned at the Feingold Association. And also, if you have not checked out my book, Nourishing Hope, there is a ton of research information. I must have 40 pages describing those biochemical processes. So feel free to check out nourishinghope.com as well. Well, thanks for listening. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon. Up next, Connecting the Dots. Nothing but love and affection.